all the technical details behind the window there. Thank you so much, Lizzie.
I appreciate that so much.
I'm not technical. Green Side Up is as technical as I like to get.
I know, and it's so funny because I've been so behind on planting my stuff all year because of the garden beds being built so late that I just feel like such a loser. But I did end up having cucumbers, so I've been successful at least at cucumbers.
Yes. And you're successful at mint. So...
The earth is successful at mint.
So if you missed the first hour of Better Lawns and Gardens, I talked about the largest pumpkin, Guinness World Records. That's pretty incredible. And then turf issues. It's a lot of issues. And we had some great phone calls, so you want to check it out. And so let's go to our dirty word of the day, which is very Halloween themed. This month, all the dirty words are seasonal with Halloween in mind.
Inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground. Inch by inch, row by row, someone bless these seeds I sow. Someone warm them from below till the rain comes tumbling down.
And now it's time for the dirty word of the day on Better Lawns and Gardens with Teresa Watkins.
And the dirty word of the day is botanophobia. First recorded in 1950 to 1955, it is derived from two words, botany and phobia. Botanophobia is an intense fear of plants. The condition is called a specific phobia, fear. Phobia is a type of anxiety disorder. So people with botanophobia might believe that plants can harm people, or that they might worry that plants will evolve and overtake humans. They may think plants are toxic or infested with harmful germs, or they may even falsely believe that plants will suck up all the oxygen. People with botanophobia often go to great lengths to avoid plants, such as deciding where to live based on plant life, refusing to go outdoors, or even skipping events or personal activities that involve plants. Because plants are almost everywhere, botanophobia can cause significant stress and even physical symptoms. A person with botanophobia may understand the fear is extreme, but they can't control it. Botanophobia can even involve a specific type of plant or all plant life, including anthrophobia, which is a fear of flowers. Dendrophobia is a fear of trees. Germophobia is a fear of germs, which may live on plants. And then entomophobia is a fear of insects, which are often found on plants. Nosophobia is a fear of illness, which a person with botanophobia might think can happen with plant exposure. Healthcare providers aren't sure what causes specific phobias, such as botanophobia, but most mental health professionals believe it's often caused by some combination of genetics, family history of anxiety and specific fears, superstition and cultural meanings. Some cultures pass down stories and beliefs that our plants are associated with witches, fairies, demons, or other mystical beings, or a traumatic experience associated with plant life. This may include a bad case of poison ivy, seeing flowers at a funeral, or watching a horror movie involving a killer plant. So the word of the day is botanophobia, Lizzie.
Okay. All right. I mean, where do you live if you have that? In a desert? I mean, how do you get away from plants?
I don't know. There's that great documentary series where they show the plants overtaking the world if there was no humans left.
Oh, and that would happen.
And the plants take over buildings and everything. And it's just really cool to see that. But I could see where that would cause somebody to be afraid. So botanophobia, try and use it this week in your Halloween.
Yes, try to use it and then get back with us and let us know how well that worked out for you.
That's so true. And so if you are have a gardening question, we will be taking them at the end of the hour. But you can call and get on the line, or you can text and send us your message that way. And so we're looking forward to that. We have Jennifer Jewell coming up. She's a garden and garden writer and garden educator and advocate. We're so honored to have her on. She's the host of the national award-winning public radio and program and podcast, Cultivating Place. So she will be up with us next. We have some great gardening questions on the text line, and this is, and then also too through the email. So we do appreciate it. So we have great weather for gardening this week. Great time to get your vegetables in, all of your vegetables. And then I also wanted to let everybody know that I will be appearing next week. We have next weekend's going to be so busy.
And it's your birthday week, too.
It is. Next month is my birthday month. It's Tony's birthday coming up on Halloween.
What?
Yeah. Tony's birthday is Halloween. I'm in November.
Okay. My bad. Okay. Take that back. Okay. Happy birthday, Tony. Anyway, you have a very busy week coming up.
I do. Well, on Saturday, next Saturday, we're going to have Dr. Gary Bachman in the studios, and then I will be speaking at the Prime Expo, Saturday, October 21st, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. I'll be speaking at noontime on designing your dream landscape, and that's going to be at the Sheraton Orlando North Hotel. Come out and see me, and I'll post it on our Facebook page. Coming up, we have Jennifer Jewell. She's wonderful to talk to, and Cultivating Place is her podcast. From the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, it's Saturday morning. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network.
When was the last time you had a truly awesome nursery experience? A nursery and garden center with a huge selection and friendly expert advice. We're talking about Quality Green Specialists in DeLand. At Quality Green, we have your favorite plants, fruit trees, flowers, vegetables, and herbs. Plus, with our 8011 fertilizer, organic azomite, and composted soil, your garden will look its very best. Great plants, sustainable products, friendly expert advice. 335 West Michigan Avenue, DeLand, and online at qualitygreenspecialist.com.
Attention people with Medicare and anyone turning 65. Are you enrolled in the best Medicare plan available? The average Medicare beneficiary has a choice of 54 Medicare plans, 766 Medicare Part D prescription drug plans, and a record 3,834 Medicare Advantage plans. How do you know you have the right plan? Simple. Call 800-571-7025. That's 800-571-7025. The service is free. You may find a plan with a $0 monthly premium, $0 copays, and $0 deductible. Don't gamble. Speak to a licensed agent to find out which plan is right for you. Call 800-571-7025. That's 800-571-7025. 800-571-7025. And let Best Medicare do the work for you.
Attention Florida drivers. October is National Pedestrian Safety Month, and we want to remind you that staying safe is a shared responsibility between you and pedestrians. Last year in Florida, there were over 10,000 pedestrian-related crashes. As a driver, be extra cautious and look out for pedestrians at all times. Slow down and yield to pedestrians in crosswalks. Failure to yield can result in a fine and 3 points on your license. Remember, safety starts with you. This message is brought to you by the Florida Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles.
Life can be full of risks. One thing you shouldn't take a risk with ever is your family's health insurance. If you're self-employed or you now need affordable health insurance, you need to make this free call right now and see how the Health Insurance Helpline can help you get it.
800-398-0651. 800-398-0651. 800-398-0651. That's 800-398-0651.
Steel gives you more than just reliable landscaping tools. Steel gives you handheld outdoor power equipment trusted by the pros. As a leading choice among landscapers in the U.S., you can take on your outdoor space with a name pros trust. Right now, save $30 on the gas-powered BG56 CE blower. Real Steel. Find yours at steeldealers.com. Available for a limited time at participating dealers while supplies last.
Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. And so this week we are talking to Jennifer Jewell. She is a gardener and a garden writer, a blogger, and a garden educator. And that's so important. We love to communicate about our gardens, and Jennifer's one of the best. She is the host of the national award-winning weekly public radio program and podcast, Cultivating Place. Good morning, Jennifer. How are you?
Good morning. I'm really well. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you for getting up so early. I have to say you're in California, so it is about 5 o'clock in the morning there, 5:17. So I do appreciate you getting up so early. And so, Jennifer, what is your first recollection of growing with seed?
You know, I must have been about 2 or 3, and my mother would take me to work at the nursery that she worked at in Berthoud, Colorado. And my first memories are of playing in the potting soil while she planted seed up above. And then the first that I was actually probably involved in, I remember my mother soaking nasturtium and sweet pea seeds in little like china cups.
Aww.
And then you know, working with those little wet textured seeds to get them into soil and start them inside.
That's wonderful. And so your newest book is called What We Sow. And as I read it, I could see and even read and feel your passion and insight of the importance of seeds. What was your impetus for writing What We Sow?
Well, you know, I think many other gardeners will remember that in early 2020, we all remember early 2020.
Yes.
But in early 2020, as gardeners, we were trying to order seeds along with all the people that were just becoming gardeners. And we kept getting these messages of out of stock, back ordered. And it was a real trigger moment for me of, even as a lifelong gardener, Teresa, thinking to myself, what don't I understand about seed and about seed supply, and how can there be scarcity in this aspect of our garden world that is so abundant and diverse? And it took me on this several year journey to try and understand so much more about how we grow seed, how people care for seed, how we legislate seed, and why it really matters to all of us that consider ourselves gardeners specifically.
I so agree with you. It was wonderful reading your insight and your history, your research. It was fascinating. And so What We Sow is a compilation of storytelling and seasonal phenology. It's a monthly journal woven together with easily understood botany. And so it's written in chronological sequence. What made you start with the first chapter in October?
Well, it seemed to me that was the sort of new year, if you will, of seeds. That this is the traditional sort of harvest season and time. Our native plants are ripening their seed and dispersing them out so they can either start to germinate or go into dormancy for the winter. So here in the Northern Hemisphere, it seemed like the start of the next cycle of seed. And so then I traced that cycle across all the way to the following October in the book.
And so your book includes anecdotes of times and events throughout history when seeds were vital. And you mentioned the pandemic just recently. But what are some of the other events that triggered seeds and interest in them and buying them?
Well, you know, it seemed to be, and this was borne out by a couple of different researchers and botanical historians, that the downturn of our economy or a war or another catastrophe like a pandemic often correlates to people having an increased interest in seeds, in saving them, in sharing them with each other, in storing them, whether that's in their fridge or if you're the Russian Empire, it's in the first known seed bank in the world for agriculturally important seed in Russia in the late 1800s. That was our very first documented sort of government-level seed bank. And it's kind of a funny thing because, of course, we as gardeners know it's actually more expensive in most cases to grow the majority of our food from seed. Like, we're just not set up to do it really conveniently and efficiently.
Right.
But it's that engagement with our survival and wanting to know how to do it, I think, that is triggered in us in these moments of kind of primal survival fear.
Well, you mentioned the first seed bank in Russia, but in the book you talk about seed banks and seed libraries. Explain the difference.
Well, it's funny because their names actually explain the difference. One is you put the bank is a facility, and there are about 1,500 really big ones around the world where people collect and put the money in. And in general, only the people who put the money or the seed, as it were, into the bank can then take that money out. But it's also a bank for the future. It's like a savings account of biodiversity and genetics, sometimes of agricultural crops, sometimes of all the biodiversity of a region or a specific kind of plant group, like all the rice or all the wheat. A library works, a seed library works just like a library. You can donate seed or books, as it were, to the library.
Right.
And then you can borrow them back out, and you borrow them, you plant them, you grow them. And in theory, if you're successful, you save some of that seed and you return it to the library.
That's wonderful. And I like the differences that you mentioned. And so what kind of, you also mentioned in the book, what kind of seed memory different cultures have. So explain what seed memory is.
Well, I think the easiest way to describe this is it is directly related to our food memory and our ecosystem memory as people. So, you know, I grew up at 10,000 feet or 8,000 feet in Colorado, but I live now in Northern California. I have been about 20 years in each of those places, and I have strong memories of the ponderosa pines, the penstemons, the lupins in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
I have strong memories in Northern California of the oaks, of the gray pine here, of the manzanita. Now, when you think of whole cultures, right, you think of the Hispanic cultures of South and Central America and Mexico, or you think of Nordic countries. They have very specific plants and cultural traditions that are tied to the seeds that are significant to them, and therefore the foods, the ornamental plants, and the ecosystems they associate with their culture. The same is true for the people of the African diaspora, the peoples of the Asian diaspora, and those are these culturally significant seeds come with even greater importance, I think, than, you know, just saying, oh, I think I'll try this petunia this year, or I think I'll try that new, you know, introduction of some other seed. These come with a long history and association of place and people, and they're considered like sacred and like family or relatives is often a term that land-based people of deep culture consider their seeds to be. It's a fascinating and beautiful relationship.
And it's generational. It gets passed down from family to family to family. And so I love that idea. So, Jennifer, you're an icon among garden communicators everywhere, including myself. And you're a host of the award-winning gardening podcast, Cultivating Place. Tell us about your gardening series.
Well, you know, it started in 2007 as a smaller, more locally based program, and in 2016 it grew up into Cultivating Place. And really, my whole mission in life, Teresa, which I'm sure is very similar to yours, is to elevate the way we think and talk about gardening, to get everybody who gardens to recognize the potential positive power we have, whether that is culturally or horticulturally or socially and culturally. It is one of the things that holds us together as humans. It is a common ground, like food, like music, like art. And I think it's one of our greatest expressions as gardeners when we do it in these very best of ways. So we help people get over botanophobia.
Oh, I'm so
I did it.
You did it. You used it this week in a sentence. That's wonderful. Thank you so much, Jennifer. What We Sow by Jennifer Jewell is a wonderful understanding of the importance of seeds, along with the amazing assortment of perspectives you bring from the historical and from the scientific world, and from growers especially. I love the anecdotes from the growers. So, where can our listeners find your book?
You can find it anywhere you get your books. You can certainly find it on my website, cultivatingplace.com, and I can send a signed copy, but it's available everywhere. And it's also available as an audio book that I do the reading of the book.
Oh, that's fascinating. I love that. Thank you so much. So now, this is a great book for gardening book clubs, and then also it'd be a nice gift for Christmas and somebody's birthday, a gardener's birthday. So I really do appreciate it. So I love having it in my library as well. So Jennifer, thank you so much for getting up so early and sharing your time with us. Where can people hear Cultivating Place?
Again, anywhere you get your podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, Audible, all the places, it's Cultivating Place, and I just really appreciate your time this morning. Thank you so much for the invitation.
You're welcome, Jennifer. Thank you so much. I'm looking forward to meeting you at one of the conferences that we all mutually attend. Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that's Jennifer Jewell. The book, What We Sow, is a fascinating book. I love that she has the chronological year, the seasons, and it's specific about seeds, about the history of it from a grower's perspective. You'll find it fascinating. That's Jennifer Jewell's What We Sow from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios. If it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. This is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. This is the perfect time for you to give us a gardening call, 1-888-455-2967, or you can text me at 23680. If you know someone who loves to garden, is new to Florida, or has a question, please let them know about Better Lawns and Gardens. And so I say new to Florida, but zones 7, 8, zones 9, 10, and 11 all of the questions you have in those areas, I can help you with. So, good morning, Teresa. This is Christine in Cairo, Georgia. Cairo is Cairo, Georgia, right? We had that conversation.
We got corrected,
before.
And I don't remember.
And so, Christine has a pet pig who has sharpened his tusks on the trunk of my rubber tree. I so wanted to play Stevie Nicks there. But, Tusk, the band song. And she says, the damage is real. Is there anything I can do? He's left some pretty big gouges on it. Okay, Christine. So the good thing is that it is a rubber tree, a ficus plant, Ficus elastica. And it's going to recover, all right? So I don't want you to do anything to the gashes except maybe just, don't put anything on it. Don't put anything into it. Just let it recover. I may water it a little bit more. I'm assuming that it's in a pot or close to the house because the ficus is not really, it would, get some damage from the freezes where you are. And so I would just let it recover. Now's a good time to fertilize it before the end of the spring. That'll give it a little bit more nutrition, but it should recover just fine. It's a tropical plant. It's not a woody plant. The ficus, as you can feel, the stem and the trunk of the tree is really quite malleable. And is that a good word, malleable?
Can you say that again?
I don't think I said it right, but malleable. There you go. It's early. I need tea. And so good question, Christine. I'd love to see a picture of your pet pig with the tusks. I think that's wonderful.
Right.
And then a picture of the rubber tree, too. So thank you for the great question. I love it. I think it'll be just fine. Don't worry about it. Don't cover it. Don't do anything except just make sure that it stays nice and healthy. Pat in Tallahassee, she says, is it too late to apply a post-emergent to our lawn? Pat, no. This is the right time of the year to do it. The weeds have been growing all summer long. They're strong during the summer when the heat's there. They love it. But now as it's getting cooler, they've spent all their energy over the summertime. They're going to be more susceptible to an herbicide. So a post-emergent herbicide right now on your weeds, a weed killer right now on your weeds, is appropriate. So good question. Good timing, too, as well. So Ruth in Tallahassee, hi to everyone in Tallahassee. You're going to have great weather this weekend. And she is at the Esposito Garden Center. Uncle Wayne Dement, not my uncle, but he's known as Uncle Wayne Dement, is going to do a presentation on bulb planting and that part of Florida, the Zone 8, is just really good for growing spring bulbs. It's a hands-on and outside presentation. It's free, and he's going to be talking about planting onion and garlic and flower bulbs. So, Ruth, thank you for letting us know about that. That sounds like a great presentation. Also, too, remember Peterson's Nursery today at 9:30 in Lakeland off of State Road 540A. They are going to have a presentation on Lawns 101. So, going there, finding out everything you need to know about turf, now's the time to take care of your turf before the winter. So Daryl in Haines said, I just planted some blueberry plants in my front yard. Would marigolds be a good companion plant? Well, marigolds are just a great summer and fall annual. They look beautiful. I think they will be pretty there. So they would be a companion plant, but I don't necessarily know that they're going to deter any insects. Blueberries right now are going through their going to be approaching their dormant season in the next few months. And so the insect issue is not going to be a main one. And, blueberries as a whole generally don't get a lot of insect issues. So they're really a great Florida native plant to grow here in Florida. They are native to Florida blueberries. And so the wood marigolds will be just a wonderful color combination for the semi-blue-green leaves of blueberries, and then also the orange or yellows or even some reddish burgundy-colored marigolds. I think that would be great. They do have some pest deterrent properties in them, but during the wintertime, we don't really have that many issues with insects. So, especially in Tallahassee, Florida, or in Haines City. So, I wouldn't worry about it too much. 1-888-455-2967, or you can text me at 23680. Next week on Better Lawns and Gardens, gardening expert and gregarious dynamo and good friend, Dr. Gary Bachman. He's going to be live here in the iHeart Studios. He and his lovely wife, Katie, are doing their annual trip to Florida.
I'm so stoked. I can't wait to see him.
I've got so many questions to ask him. We're going to have a great time. And so William sent me an email, and he sent in great photographs. I love when you send good photographs because I can help you, of his dying tomato plants. And he has a celebrity tomato that was growing great, but then all of a sudden, whoosh, it died overnight practically. He lives in Port St. John, and it's a raised bed with new dirt in it. So disease issues like you have, it looks like you have a bacterial type of wilt with this tomato, and that causes decline like overnight. But you can get it in a number of different ways, William. You can get it through wounding it during transplanting, okay? And it can just, it takes a little while to start to activate, and then it will die immediately. But there's also carriers like certain insects, aphids and whiteflies, that can bring diseases into your to your bed. But I also see weeds in your photos. And if the spurge and other weeds that you have are infected with the disease, it may not bother the weed, but it's certainly going to bother your tomato. So the bacteria inhibits normal water and nutrient uptake by clogging the vessel as it multiplies. And so I can see the kind of bloating that you have in the stems and the brownish, you know, characteristics of the disease. Remove the plant immediately, William. Have a garbage bag right there. Don't carry the tomato plant far. Rotate the crops in the bed. And in the future, use disease-resistant varieties. If it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios. This is Better Lawns and Gardens and Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. You still have time for your phone calls, 1-888-455-2967, or you can text at 23680, and you can give us your gardening question. Let's go to Eileen in Stuart, Florida. Good morning, Eileen. How can I help you?
Good morning. I know you had said to apply, now's the time to apply the herbicide to the grass for the weeds that are growing.
Mm-hmm.
Is it best to do a weed and feed product or just a product, just an herbicide like Image, for instance,
well,
or just the weeds?
Okay, great question. Image is basically, you can get rid of sedges with Image, okay? So it doesn't really apply to broadleaf weeds. You want to use a different herbicide. So first, Eileen, okay. I would identify what weeds you have and determine the amount of it. You know, so weed and feeds aren't generally recommended by, you know, the by IFAS, only because you're fertilizing, you're feeding plants, but then you're also killing plants. So you might not necessarily have a need to use a lot of herbicide. So I would fertilize and then just use a separate herbicide, depending on what kind of weed you have. So if you have a, you know, St. Augustine lawn and you have broadleaf weeds, then I would just use a separate application of atrazine and get rid of them that way. So that weed identification is very important, and then do it separately from your fertilizing.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your help, and I love the show.
Thank you so much, Eileen, for listening. I certainly appreciate it. I have a cousin, Eileen, who is in Newfoundland, and I love her to death, Eileen. And so I love the name. So lots of great Eileens today. So I appreciate you listening, and thank you so much.
And thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. All right. And so let's see what we have here. Let's go to Liz in, do we know where?
Windermere.
Mm-hmm. Windermere. Thank you so much, Liz. Good morning. How can I help you?
Hi. I have sable palms in my front landscaping,
mm-hmm.
ornamental-looking palms. Five planted at the same time. One is half the size, ailing mightily. And my lawn guy has fertilized it, and I've done everything I can think of. Any advice?
Okay, how tall are they?
It's about half the size, so it's about 3 feet now, and the others are at least 6.
Okay, and they're sable palms. Are they sable? Yeah. Are they cabbage palms, or are they saw palmettos?
I wish I could tell you that.
Okay, so are they a single trunk going straight up, or are they multiple where they have?
Some of them have multiple. This particular one has one.
Okay, all right. So they are saw palmettos. Okay, so and they're about 3 feet tall. You said right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The ailing one is. The others are six, all planted at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
It was doing just fine, and every frond fell off.
Hmm. Okay, so let me ask you this. Are they in one bed that is next to turf?
No. The sidewalk runs between the the landscaping bed and the turf.
Okay. And does your maintenance company spray a weed killer on your lawn to edge with?
They do a weed killer on the lawn, mm-hmm. but because they're all in that same landscaping bed, you know, the one is ailing. That's why I can't quite figure out.
Well, that's what I'm trying to figure out. If they're spread, so what do you have underneath it? Do you have just regular mulch, or do you have weeds coming up in it?
No, we do have mulch and bushes around, you know, but there aren't too many weeds.
Okay.
I'm a pretty good weeder.
And that's why I'm kind of trying to figure out why, because palms don't die. They're really, for the saw palmettos, they're really very hardy and, you know.
I know. So what would make it ail like that?
They're spraying a weed killer in that area to kill the weeds, and they're not touching the plant, the green portion of the fronds, but they are they're soaking the ground, and it's getting into the roots. And I'm going to tell you, that's probably why it's dying.
Just that one, though? You don't think it happened to any of the other?
They may have sprayed a little too much the last time they did it. Okay, or that they're concentrating it in that area. The other areas are not spraying as much, so it's diluting when it goes into the ground. But if they're spraying that area every couple of weeks to get rid of the weeds, and it's soaking that root, it's the root that's going to die. So I would like to look at it. They like water, so it's not an issue of too much water, drought tolerant, so they're not an issue with not having enough water. How long have they been in the ground?
At least 9 years.
Okay, so yeah, I'm going to say that they're probably that somebody got a little bit too, too much in that area. But I would definitely do not recommend landscaping maintenance companies edge with any kind of glyphosate or weed killer at all, because this happens and it causes witch's broom, and the plants don't die, but they start to get sick. And yeah. So that's the only thing that I can think of right there, because if there's no disease that affects the saw palmettos, that would just take one out. Okay,
and so the others are so healthy, it's unbelievable. That's why I was like, okay, I'm going to find an expert.
Right. So thank you. So it's you called the right place, but it's probably they got too much concentration there and it's affecting the roots and it's struggling. So ask them stop doing that.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Appreciate your expertise.
Thank you, Liz. Let me know if that helps. Okay. So let me know if they're spraying in that area, and that's going to tell you if it is. Now, if it's not, then I would like to see a photograph of it to see if I could.
I'm going to send you a photo anyway, just to see if you have any other.
That would be great. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. That always helps. All right. So super duper 1-888-455-2967. We have a few more minutes, Lizzie. If you have a text message, 23680.
You didn't ask me what I'm drinking this morning.
Oh, what are you drinking this morning?
Eggnog.
I saw your post on Facebook, and I was so happy for you. Eggnog. You're such a wuss, though. You could have made it all summer long.
I am. Okay, so we were talking about things that you're afraid of on Good Morning Orlando this week.
Yes.
My thing is food poisoning. That is my thing, because actually we called my husband Shrek. Shrek, at the beginning of our marriage, was in ICU and almost died from food poisoning from a ballpark.
Oh my goodness.
So I have just I've always, even younger. So yeah. I'm really chicken.
I can understand that, because I mean, when I was 16, I was in a very bad bicycle accident, and it was at the top of that hill in Mount Dora that goes straight down.
Yes.
You know that one that goes straight down. And so I started at the top and it fell all the way down to the bottom, and I had broken jaw, fractured cheekbones, 60 stitches on my face, and I could not eat anything but eggnog for months.
Now,
while I was
drank
it, that was my sort, and I loved it. It was so much fun, but we made it because it wasn't.
I know you sent me the recipe, and I'm so excited to try it.
But I can see where, because you're putting raw eggs into it,
But I'll eat a runny egg too, so I don't know.
I'm glad you got eggnog, so you're drinking eggnog this morning.
Yes. Yes, and every day.
Wonderful. I have my tea. I love my good cup of tea all the time. So that's a great. Well, I appreciate that the eggnog is being sold for you.
Yes, so thank you, stores, especially Publix. They got them in first.
That's wonderful. So we have a text message. I don't know from where, but it says, is alfalfa hay suitable for mulching vegetable beds and fruit trees? Yes, it is. Okay, so you can just use it and place it out there about 3 to 4 inches, and it'll probably compact down. But, yeah, you can. Now, on your citrus trees, you want to make sure you're not mulching it too much. If you are citrus, you want to keep it away, all mulch away from the trunks of trees and shrubs. So you want to put it down to prevent the weeds from getting in so that weeds don't germinate. You're blocking the sunlight, of course, but you don't want to have it up against the trunk. And you want to give it good air circulation so it doesn't rot.
I mulched my poinsettias like a month and a half ago, and I swear they grew a foot.
It's holding the moisture in the ground, so it's not evaporating as much. So we've had some really great temperatures. I would like to thank Jim Charlier. He's a co-author of Harry Potter's Herbology Magic. It's a wonderful book full of projects. You can transform your world into a real wizardry world. And the projects look amazing. I'm going to have Tony do a couple of them for our backyard. And then Jennifer Jewell, thank you so much for coming on. She is a garden icon, and she is just amazing with her podcast series, Cultivating Place. She's the author of What We Sow, and both books are going to be appreciated by garden enthusiasts and then also Harry Potter fans. They will love it too as well. So I'm going to post all the links to the topics today on today's show on Facebook. If you do have a gardening question, you can still email us at betterlawns.com, and you can send me photographs. That helps out tremendously. Remember, location, and your name. That will be helpful. And then you can subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a show. Go onto our Facebook page and like us. Look at the video of the beautiful swamp sunflowers.
It is gorgeous. Please don't miss that. If you go over to Lake Jessup, check it out.
It is great. Lizzie, thank you for a great show and for all your hard work. From the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, maker of organic mosquito bits and dunks, an organic year-round oil spray. I'm Teresa Watkins. For Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network.
Make sure you guys go check out our website daily. We have new things up all the time for you to check out and giving away really cool things. That's WFLAOrlando.com.